Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramalides, joined as ever by Sid Lowe. Hello Sidney.
Hello Philip, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad, yeah. It's been an early start, but we're up and running.
You've been very busy. You've been getting lots of trains all around the country, haven't you?
Mostly to the same place.
but Madrid, Barcelona, Barcelona to Madrid and back several times, sometimes in the same day. Anyway, you're here with us, which is the important thing, to talk about everything that happened on match day 22. Before we get to the football, we've got some big news to start today's podcast. Drum roll, please, Sydney. We are very excited. That was awful. I mean, that was really, really... We should have got a better drum roll, because this is big news. We're very excited to announce that TSFP is teaming up with Goal Hanger Podcasts. You might have heard of some of their other podcasts, especially if in the UK, like The Rest is Politics and The Rest is History, two of the biggest pods in the country right now. And you might have heard of their founder, a certain Gary Lineker. Don't worry, as a TSFP listener, not much is going to change. The Monday pod will still be available as ever in the usual places. If you're already a subscriber, it should arrive in your favourite podcast app. As always, you don't have to do anything, and nothing is changing over on Patreon either. Depending on where you are in the world, you might hear an advert or two on the Monday podcast, and the Monday pod will also no longer be available on SoundCloud. But that's about it. Feel free to get in touch if you have any questions. We're really excited about this, and we think it'll help us to take TSFP to the next level. So that's our big news on a Monday. Sydney, we've got lots to talk about. Let's tell everybody what happened on match day 22. It kicked off on Friday night with an unbelievable scoreline. Girona beating Almeria by 6-2 at the Estadio Montilivi. Girona continuing their free scoring run. Real Sociedad conceded in injury time to draw 1-1 at home to Celta Vigo on Saturday. Real Betis beat Valladolid by 2-1, all 3 goals coming in the first half. Mallorca continued their really impressive home form. 5 consecutive home wins for them on the island. They beat Villarreal by 4-2. They're up to 8th. In the table, it's 4 consecutive defeats for Villarreal for the first time since 1999. Then on Saturday evening, Real Madrid went to El Sadar to take on Osasuna. It was always going to be tough, and it was, but they managed to beat them by 2-0. Sunday saw Espanyol score in injury time to beat Elche 1-0. Rayo Vallecano and Sevilla played out an entertaining 1-1 draw at the Estadio Vallecas. Atletico Madrid beat Athletic Club 1-0 thanks to a marvellous goal from Antoine Griezmann, who was really quite impressive in this game. And Barcelona beat Cadiz by 2-0 at the Camp Nou to re-establish their 8-point lead at the top of the table. Sydney, let's start with the game that took place on Sunday evening, then, that 2-0 victory for Barcelona against Cadiz. It feels like we've seen this game quite a few times before this season. Barcelona not necessarily at their best. On this occasion, they rested quite a few players, but they still managed to get the victory and get another clean sheet. A 17th clean sheet of the season. Nobody's ever kept 17 clean sheets in the first 22 match days of a La Liga season. It's really quite extraordinary. Although again, and I feel like we said this before, not sure how they did it, because Cadiz had chances.
Well, Cadiz hit the post twice. They had 2 goals disallowed. They had that extraordinary save from Ter Stegen down to his right-hand side. I wonder if this game was a slightly exaggerated version of what we've seen in some of the others, in the sense that I think the fact that Barca were 2-0 up by half time and the game seemed over is part of the reason why the game wasn't over, if you see what I mean. So some of the tension I think had gone out of it in the second half, and Cadiz, who you know, they really have been quite good in the last couple of months. They've really improved. It seems like their winter signings have made a real impact. And actually, as their manager put it after the game, he said, I love this Spanish phrase. He said, we put the fear back in Barcelona's body, which I really quite like that one. And he's right, they did.
They did. They were, seems strange to say, they were almost sort of hanging on at the end, but they managed to keep a clean sheet. They did rest a number of players, and they did try and keep one eye on Thursday's clash with Manchester United at Old Trafford. Ronald Araujo had the night off, as did Rafinha. Robert Lewandowski didn't. I was a bit surprised. I mean, I wasn't surprised, because actually I knew this was going to happen. But if I was Chaffee, I might have given Ronald Lewandowski the night off, maybe a bit more of a break, because he hasn't been at his best. But what do I know? Because he scored, and maybe that'll help him. Mm. You know, he went off after 75 minutes. But yeah, he hadn't been at his best. 3 matches without scoring, but he did manage to finally score.
Yeah, I wonder if that was actually part of the thinking. That, you know, as you say, a guy that comes off the back of 3 games who actually hasn't played particularly well since the World Cup, even when he has scored goals, he hasn't always looked particularly great. And I wonder if Xavi was thinking, well, look, at home against Cardiff. And I don't think anyone ever thinks, right, this team will be easy. But of course, managers are not stupid. They're aware that there are some teams that in theory you've got a better chance of scoring against than others. And I suppose you want to give yourself the opportunity to give him, or to allow him to try and get the goal that I think emotionally was probably quite important for him. I thought that the first half performance from Ferran Torres in particular was brilliant, and we haven't actually seen a huge amount from Ferran. And obviously Lewandowski scored the second, which he took very well. He might have scored the first, actually, because it's his diving header that eventually leads to Sergio Roberto scoring. And at that point, I think the game is kind of done. And I think it feels like a really good night from Barcelona's point of view, because of the fact that you probably feel like you've recovered Ferran Torres. You feel like you might have helped Robert Lewandowski find a way through. You've been able to take the opportunity to rest some players. And I think as well, there's a slight... Well, let's go back to that phrase about putting the fear in the body. I think there's a fear at Barcelona, I think, at the moment, because of the fact that Pedri pulled up recently. And that just is a little reminder, you know, of kind of how quickly things can unravel and you know, how things can go wrong for you. And so I think it was important for Xavi, who really hadn't actually rotated much in the last couple of months, to I think just kind of take the opportunity to say, okay, let's kind of work through this. Let's give some players rest where they're needed, and those who don't play. And I think his phrase was something along the lines of, I was glad to give minutes to those who don't have them.
And he did. And it did. And it worked, ultimately, because they got the victory.
Yes.
And they are 8 points clear of Real Madrid at the top of the table. Real Madrid, who went to Osasuna and beat them 2-0 at El Cidar. The goals coming very late on. Fede Valverde in the 78th minute and Marco Asensio in injury time, with basically the last kick of the game. Headlines made by Vinicius again. But really, this was for footballing reasons, I thought, because he was really quite good in this game.
So did I. I thought that it was a game where there was no issues. Yes, there was a team, Osasuna, who were obviously aggressive, who were tough, who defend very well, but they're also a team that take the game to you. I thought they changed, by the way, for those who didn't see the game, they changed their structure. They play with John Moncayola at right back. He's a midfielder, essentially to try and deal with Vinicius. There was a recognition that Vinicius was a problem. I thought that in the first half, at least, they were the better side. I also felt like Madrid demonstrated their dependence on Vinicius. Everything went to the left. Everything. And it didn't always come off. There was a couple of really nice...
But wasn't that... Don't you think that was a targeted idea, because they had a midfielder playing at right back because their two first choice right backs were out? So they said, right, let's target this guy because he isn't a midfielder. He isn't a right back. Let Vinny run at him.
I think there's a degree of that, but I actually think it's a more simple thing than that. I think it's the paucity of the other options up front. I actually thought it was exaggerated, the extent to which everything went to Vinicius, and I think that was in part because we basically didn't see Rodrigo until early in the second half, when he did one nice run and bent the ball just past the far post. We really didn't see him at all. Fede Valverde, in that nominally in that right attacking position, wasn't really in the attacking part of the pitch very often, and so it felt like it kept going to Vinicius. I think you're right, there's a degree of choice, but I actually think it was more about not having a huge amount else. I thought Moncayola largely did a pretty good job, although Vinicius escaped him a couple of times. There's one brilliant little run and he gets into the area on a narrow angle and then loses control of the ball. There's another where he gives himself a really good chance and again slightly loses control and can't get the shot off, which
really and truly he was pretty much clean through at that point. And it was a tough game, but not a problematic one until right at the end of the first half, when there's a brief confrontation between him and Moy Gomez. And allow me to say this in the context of everything we've been saying about Vinicius in recent weeks, that brief confrontation of Moy Gomez was entirely about Vinicius. He took Moy Gomez out, and then for reasons I don't fully understand, went and confronted him. And Moy actually, it seemed to me, hadn't done anything wrong. By the way, Moy played really, really well. And then what really impressed me...
By the way, sorry,
you
were there as well, just to let the listeners know that you were there pitch side watching it all unfold in front of you. So.
Yeah, and in terms of the atmosphere, you know, there was whistles when he got the ball, but it wasn't, from what I heard at least, wasn't particularly nasty, although there's been footage from the television, which I must admit at the time I didn't notice. As I've said to you this lots of times, I'm really bad at making out what's said by football fans. And during the minute silence, someone shouted, "Vinicius, hijo de puta." Vinicius, you, I suppose, son of a bitch, bastard. I don't know how you best want to translate that. But it was one voice. But the rest of it was tense, and they were on top of him and stuff. But it wasn't nasty, and the game wasn't nasty, although it was tough. What I was really struck by in the second half was not just that Vinicius played well, which he did, and he did two or three extraordinary things. One really brilliant cut away from the defender. He scored what I thought was a gorgeous goal that was disallowed. He just dinks it over the goalkeeper and nudges it in by the post. He kept on running at him, but that was the thing that really struck me. Partly, I suppose, because I was pitch side, but his athleticism. And I don't mean athleticism in the basic sense that we all know. He's very quick. I mean in terms of what we were talking about the other day in relation to Youssef En-Nesyri, the repetition of runs. So Vinicius must have made 7 or 8 absolutely full pelt sprints in the game. And by the 7th or the 8th or the 9th or the 10th or whichever number it was, he was still quicker than anyone by a very long way. That capacity for stamina, for repetition, for keeping on going. And I think that's a mental capacity as well as a physical one. In other words, you know, in a game like this, give it to me, I'll do this. And he was going all the way to the end. I thought he was absolutely brilliant on Saturday. Really brilliant. But as I say, what really struck me was the dependence upon him and the willingness to take the ball and go and go and go and just still be flying into the end. And funny enough, just as I was thinking that, he pulled up and was holding onto the back of his hamstring. I thought, well, that's really, you know, that's typical, isn't it? But then he got up and carried on again. So he was ultimately fine.
He's the second player in La Liga with the most number of metres covered at high intensity.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I didn't know that. Right. Who's first?
Shall I let you have a guess? Have a guess.
Is it En-Nesyri?
No, he's nowhere near on the list.
I'm thinking it's one of the Rio players. I'm thinking it's either Fran Garcia or Alvaro Garcia.
You're good at this. It's Fran Garcia, my friend. Yeah,
it's Fran
absolutely.
Garcia.
Right. Alvaro Garcia is the second fastest player in La Liga. Right. He's clocked at a maximum speed of 35.6 kilometres per hour, only bettered by Anthony Lozano of Cadiz this season, who has 35.9. So there we go. Those are the quickest players. But yeah, Vinicius, if you look at these metrics, and I do have access to quite a lot of advanced statistics in terms of individual performances, Vinicius is right up there in loads of these different physical metrics, because he is quite extraordinary, as you say, the way he keeps going. Good news for Real Madrid that Fede Valverde scored, continuing his improvement. He's coming back from a difficult time off the pitch, which seems to have been put behind him in pleasing fashion for everybody. And you can see that on the pitch. Scored at the Club World Cup. He scored here as well. And Real Madrid need a good version of Fede Valverde.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And as I say, I didn't think he was in the game at the top of the pitch very much in the first half, but I think in the second, not only did he score the goal, but the whole team, I think, functioned better in the second half. I think we sometimes overlook this, by the way, and funny enough, I asked one of the, I can't remember which of the two, I spoke to two Osasuna players post-game, and I can't remember which one of the two it was. I think it was Darko, but it might not have been. And he was saying this thing, you know, we talk a lot about Madrid's quality, we talk a lot about the technical capacity they have, but they're actually really great athletes as well, not just Vinicius, but the whole team. And sometimes we tend to look at physicality as something that other teams use to equalise, if you like, to even out the game against Real Madrid. But actually, Madrid are probably physically better than the immense majority of teams in the division as well.
Just a word on the atmosphere there, because if you haven't been to this fixture or you weren't aware of what this is like, for Osasuna, this is probably the biggest game of the season. They have a real healthy dislike of Real Madrid, and when they come to El Sadar, they want to make it as intimidating as possible. They want them to know that they do not like them. And so it is one of the most hostile atmospheres you can encounter in Spain, certainly not in a local derby, because there's nothing local about this fixture, but there is certainly a very heated atmosphere. What's it like going there for these kind of nights?
Well, I was sitting behind the goal in front of the noisiest bunch of fans. That end of the stadium, by the way, has got rail standing, so you know. The fans can stand during the game, and really, really noisy. Every now and again, of course, someone will fall over and they'll be shouting abuse at him. At one point, I think someone threw a sandwich at someone. They threw it in the second half, which disappoints me because it means they didn't manage to finish it all at half time. But you know, those kind of little things aside, and there were a couple of times where you know, someone would go down, they'd be called hijo de puta and stuff like that, and every now and again you think, maybe a step too far, but actually fundamentally it's brilliant. Fundamentally it's really, really enjoyable. I think most players, by the way, accept that and embrace it as well, even at those moments when they maybe hear things that they shouldn't. And obviously, look, the point needs to be made that we're drawing a distinction here between the kind of standard sort of getting on people's backs and the kind of racist abuse that Vinicius has been facing over the last few weeks, which, as far as I'm aware, did not happen at the weekend.
Yes, La Liga have seemingly implemented a special person to follow, or people to follow, a team to follow Vinicius around different stadiums this season to make sure that he is not abused racially. All right, let's move on and talk about the game that you were at on Sunday at the Civitas Metropolitano. Atletico Madrid 1, Athletic Club 0. Atletico won, but in the first half, Athletic Club were really quite good.
Yeah, and Atletico weren't. I was struck by the lack of atmosphere, the lack of pace about Atletico Madrid, which the two things probably go slightly hand in hand. There was silence mostly from the south stand, which of course is where most of the noise normally comes from. There's a sense, I think, now of a kind of a division.
Sorry, they're on strike, aren't they?
The
ultras, the Frente Atletico, they're on strike because they're still upset about the club badge. Is that it?
Or
is it,
I believe so, because there was a couple of chants about El Escudo no se toca. Again, the badge shouldn't be messed with. There was a couple of moments where there would be sort of some chants from one part of the ground and whistles from elsewhere. But look, onto the football, Atletico didn't play well at all in the first half, although Reinildo did. And you were mentioning the fastest players in La Liga earlier on. And I was really struck how often Reinildo was the quickest of the ball. A couple of times he had straight races with Iñaki Williams, who of course normally is in the top three or four players in terms of speed in La Liga. At one point was the fastest, even if he's not anymore. And Reinildo was absolutely fantastic in an otherwise really quite poor performance, I thought. And there was a tetchiness about the place as well. And certainly when Carrasco had a couple of early chances and didn't take them, it wasn't just that people were groaning. People were kind of shouting, basically, "You're rubbish," at him. And there was a sort of a tension. But the second half performance, after Atletico hadn't played well in the first half, and Athletic had, I think it's worth pointing out, I think you're right to make that distinction. They moved the ball well. They created reasonably good chances. They opened Atletico up. They're a team, as I think the stats say this, that in terms of number of chances created should have far more goals than they do have. They didn't get them at the weekend. I wouldn't say there was necessarily really, really clear chances, although there's a lovely pass from Iñaki Williams. I think it's Danny Garcia, isn't it, diving in at the far post, who puts it over. That was probably the best of them. And in the second half, Atletico improved enormously. And, you know, with the exception maybe of Reinildo, Antoine Griezmann is so much better than everyone else in that Atletico team. I mean, he's a properly brilliant footballer. Now, I know we know this, but I think at times we forget it. I think the goal that he scores is really exceptional and out of almost nothing. He has the freedom to sort of go all over the pitch. I actually prefer him when he's got a forward in front of him rather than playing as two kind of false forwards, which he did to start with because it was him and Correa up front. I thought he looked more comfortable once Morata was on the pitch, once Depay was on the pitch. He scores a brilliant goal and he's just a really, really good footballer. And they're going to need him. And Simeone said this after the game, didn't he? He said words to the effect of, I can't remember the exact quote, but words to the effect of, when he's at his best, we are a much better team. And I'm not sure if that's because the rest of the team really is any better, or if it's just because he elevates, you know, the chances created, the number of goals scored, and just the whole thing on his own.
Reinildo is the fifth quickest player in
the... Oh, is he? Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Where's Iñaki in that list?
He's seventh.
Oh, that's lower than I thought. Okay.
But hold on. Sorry. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players all tied on the same top speed, and Iñaki and Reinildo are two of them. So,
I must admit, I'm quite dubious about these speed statistics.
Well, take it up with the good people at Media Coach, Sydney. I'm just reading what's
going on. I'll have a word with Robert Moreno next time I see him.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because he effectively created this whole model, yeah.
He did. So there we go. Atletico Madrid beating Athletic Club. That goal from Antoine Griezmann. There was a nice headline in, I think it was AS today, talking about Griezmann. And the headline was, El Principito de Pesadillas, the little prince of nightmares. And he's a nightmare for Athletic Club because he scored 14 goals against them, more than against any other team. So he particularly likes scoring against the side from Bilbao. Quickly want to talk about the game in Vallecas between Rayo Vallecano and Sevilla. Rayo staying sixth, and Sevilla are 12th, 5 points above the relegation zone. First half, Sevilla were better. Second half, Rayo were really, really quite good, and it looked like they were going to get an equaliser after Suso had given Sevilla the lead in the first half with a... By the way, it's an own goal, this goal. It's a massive, yes, massive deflection of Oscar Valentin. But somehow the goal has been given to Suso and he's celebrating it. And it's his first goal for 2 years in La Liga. But it's clearly an own goal. But anyway, that's by the by. Then Florian Lejeune popped up in the second half to equalise for Rayo Vallecano. Rayo, by the way, who have scored, I think it's 42% of their goals from set pieces. More than anyone else in La Liga, these corner routines are working for Rayo. And Florian Lejeune has got 4 goals, which is really good for a centre-back. A few of them have been direct from free kicks, because he can hit them as well. But yeah, Rayo playing well in the second half, Sevilla playing better in the first half. I was struck, by the way, in the centre of the Sevilla midfield, and he dropped off a little bit in the second half, but Papagueye looks like a really good signing. It looks like Monchi finally got it right in terms of bringing in a player that they need. He was brought in the January transfer window from Marseille, and he was really, really good. Physical presence, literally just the player that they need, the player that Gudelli isn't playing there anymore, Fernando is getting old. They needed him, and his presence there certainly helped them a lot. I don't know if you've had a chance to see much of him
I think they needed him desperately. Because it was a horribly flat-footed team, Sevilla. Mm. You know, horribly lacking in athleticism, in speed, in pace, and I think his introduction is vitally, vitally important for everyone around him. And also, you know, you add to that the fact that in the series now playing well, even seeing Suso back in the team at the weekend, the return of Ocampos, and all of a sudden this looks really, really different, doesn't it?
I mean, you mentioned Ocampos again. He was just... He is someone that just plays 100 miles an hour all the time until he drops. He literally just gives absolutely everything until he physically can't give any more. And I think you said this maybe on last week's bonus podcast for patrons, that he looks like a man who's been given a second chance. And that is exactly what he looks like. He was ostracised in Amsterdam after that chaotic transfer at the end of August. He's back and he's playing like a man revived. So there are signs, positive signs for Sevilla, although they still only have 2 wins away from home all season. They need to improve that if they're to put more distance between themselves and the relegation zone. Rayo, stay sixth. Okay, I think, Sid, I think the push for a Champions League spot is over. I think that might be too much for them now, because they are 7 points off Atletico Madrid. But European football, it could be great. I mustn't get carried away, but there's every chance that Rayo could be battling between now and the end of the season. And
it's,
you know,
still,
what? Because last
it
season,
is still possible.
Yeah, of course it's still possible. And last season they fell off a cliff horribly in the second half of the season. But this season, the squad's better. The squad is much better, with a few little additions who have made really, really big differences. Florian Lejeune in the heart of defence. Up front, you've got Sergio Camello, who's leading the line really quite brilliantly. RDT will eventually be brilliant when he gets back to full fitness. I don't think he's still there yet, but this is a better team than it was last year, so I don't think they're going to fall off a cliff and get drawn into a relegation zone. And I do think they can potentially dream of European football. Let's see. I'm getting carried away with myself.
Not least because last year happened, Phil, and this is part of it. There's a lesson from last year, and Antonio Dalla was talking about this a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember which game it was now afterwards, and he was saying that last year, he said, I think if anything, we learned that this team plays better when it's under pressure. And I think what happened last year was there was almost too much humility
You know, all that talk about Europe and was countered by talk of saying, no, it's about survival, it's about getting the points, it's about staying in the division. And once that happened, and in particular, I think, once they were knocked out of the Copa del Rey, there was kind of a sense of, well, that's our season done. And I think what Iraola is trying to do now is increase the pressure on the players, to demand of them that actually, you know what, not necessarily we must get into Europe, but this is genuinely possible if we keep going for it. And you look at the teams around them, and with the exception of Villarreal, who you've got to assume will improve, but maybe not, they look as good as those teams around them. I don't think it's impossible at all that they get that place now.
You mentioned Villarreal, four consecutive defeats for them. They are so reliant on Gerard Moreno. I mean, when he's not in the team, they look very, very beatable. They look beatable, and they were beaten pretty comfortably by Mallorca. I say pretty comfortably. I mean, they did equalise on a couple of occasions. They had a goal ruled out as well, but I don't know. There seems to be a bit too much reliance on Gerard Moreno, who is a bloody good player. I mean, if you're going to be reliant on one player, someone is incredibly talented as Gerard Moreno, it's perhaps understandable, but I don't know, Sydney. Another defeat for Villarreal.
And four in a row is a big deal, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. No, if they lose at home to Getafe, then goodness me, they really are in trouble. That's their next game. Speaking of Getafe, Monday night football is at the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez. You're going to miss it, Sid.
No, I'm not.
No, you're not. You're going to travel from the other side of the country.
I've timed my train. I'm taking a slight risk in terms of the return to try and ensure that I get to Getafe on time. It was straight from Atocha to Getafe Central, and then Getafe Central to the Coliseum.
You'll make it. Where there's a will, there's a way, and you have plenty of will to watch Getafe against Valencia on Monday night. It is a massive, massive game.
It's huge, by the way. It is absolutely huge.
So it will be interesting to see how Ruben Baraja gets on, the playing legend of Valencia, who is now their new manager in an extremely unenviable position. They're in the relegation zone. They're playing awfully. The team are lacking in morale. The fans are utterly, utterly despondent and desperate for the owner to leave. So it is a very difficult situation. Good luck, Ruben Baraja. This week, of course, we've got the two biggest clubs in Spain against the two biggest clubs in England. With apologies to the current leaders of the Premier League, the current champions of the Premier League, and the most recent English winners of the Champions League. But Arsenal, Manchester City and Chelsea are not on the same level as El Liverpool y El Manchester, because they do often call it El Manchester here, meaning Manchester United. Sorry, City fans, but it's El Manchester or El United or El Unai. Anyway.
Here's El Unai, Unai. You so often get Unai. Here's a question for you. I mean, I'm just going to reinforce what you're saying, basically. Liverpool, Manchester United, Real Madrid and Barcelona, within 30 miles of each other. Is that the greatest concentration of football ever? In terms of, these are probably the four biggest clubs in the world, in terms of fan base, in terms of history and so on, and they're 30 miles apart, albeit, it's, admittedly, there's 2 days between
them. I was trying to think of, I mean, this has never happened before, right? I mean, these teams playing,
as far as I know, it might have done, but I'm not aware of it.
In the same country? Certainly not. But there we go. It's a big week for us to look forward to, with Liverpool hosting Real Madrid in the Champions League, Barcelona travelling to Old Trafford as well in the Europa League, and Sevilla hoping to get the job done in midweek when they take on PSV Eindhoven. They're 3-0 up, though, from the first leg. If you'd like more Spanish football content, may I point you to our Patreon page, patreon.com/TSFP. We produce lots of content there throughout the week. You get a Q&A podcast on a Tuesday, so if there's anything we didn't talk about, and there's lots we haven't talked about that we could do, and if there's something that you'd like us to talk about, send us a question and we'll mention it on our Q&A podcast. Bonus podcast, of course, coming up later in the week as well. You've got our special series, TSFP Presents, where we delve into the history and culture of Spanish football, so make sure you come and join us at patreon.com/TSFP. It's only around €4 or £4 or dollars a month, so potentially pretty good value if Spanish football is your thing. If you don't want to pay for your content, that's okay. I won't judge you. You know, I listen to some podcasts and I don't subscribe to their Patreon. It's okay. It's absolutely fine. And actually, do you know what? We'll just keep doing this podcast for free. We are always going to do this Monday podcast for free. It is something that we have promised to ourselves and to you, and we're going to keep doing it. So if you don't want to join us on Patreon, no worries. We'll be here next week, as ever, with the free Monday pod. Until then, amigos, adios.
Cheerio.